There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, Senior Reporter at Hort Week, and on this week's podcast I am joined by John Grantham, Managing Director of LUC, which is a planning, impact assessment, landscape design, ecology and geospatial consultancy. Did I get them all, John?
You did. You got them all, yes. You got them all, Rachel. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to delve into how this past year has been for LUC and what the future holds. Firstly, though, I thought maybe we could explore some of the projects. You have a hugely wide range of different schemes that you guys work on. What are some of the projects you've been working on this year?
Within the practice, we've got, as you say, Rachel, a really exciting dynamic range of projects, some of which have been quite high profile. I'll identify two. The first is a project called Clay Pits in central Glasgow, which is starting to win awards, which we're delighted about. But it's been in the practice for 7 years, so we took it right from inception, and it's related to the canal in Glasgow, and it's a restoration regeneration project which brings together all the various aspects of LUC, design, heritage, impact assessment. And it's created a wonderful area of open space that links two parts of Glasgow, the West End, and now is very popular. And I was in Glasgow a couple of weeks ago and had a tour there from the designer, and it's great to see it so well used. Another quite high profile project is that we are lead master planners for the expansion of the All England Club in Wimbledon. So they are looking, they have taken ownership of land, the golf course, and are looking to build a new show court. But the main driver behind that is to create a facility whereby they can hold their qualifying tournament for the championships at the same location. So again, we've been working on that for several years now. It's still to be determined. The planning application is in, so we were lead designers, but also had very significant heritage, ecological and landscape impacts to that, and we also coordinated the environmental impact assessment. But those are two large design-led projects, but there's a whole range of others. And another one I particularly like to highlight is the work we're doing on the All England strategic landscape mapping assessment, which is mainly driven by our GIS and visualization team along with our landscape planners. And that is extremely exciting because it's looking at whether we should be designating new nationally significant landscapes. But expanding the criteria for doing that to bring in more social and economic considerations alongside environmental considerations. That's still at a relatively early stage, but it's a big project, and it's one that we're extremely excited about to be involved in.
Yeah, a really exciting project. And you've been commissioned by Natural England for that. What do you kind of hope will come of it, I suppose?
Well, I think there's many aspects to it, Rachel. I think ultimately it would be nice to see if we can manage to protect more of our nationally important landscapes. But perhaps to move away from a notion, maybe that when you know, you go back to the origins of the national parks and the areas of outstanding natural beauty, we're about, these are our beautiful places, let's protect them. I think that's moved on so much. And now some of the areas that at that time weren't considered to fall into that category now do. And that's in part because they serve a wider range of functions. They're more accessible to different communities. People can go there, can enjoy the natural environment, the beautiful landscapes that we have. They're still very beautiful places, but they are designated for slightly wider reasons. And as a consequence, what would be great to be able, in 5 years' time, to see these areas being visited by groups of people who generally are not going into the national parks and the areas of outstanding natural beauty at the moment. And that's often sectors of society who generally feel excluded from the environment. So I'm very excited that the upshot of that might be a greater understanding of you know, the English countryside, the English landscapes, but for reasons beyond, they're just nice to look at.
Kind of that human level and how important they are.
Yeah, very, very, very much so. And I think the sort of social and economic dimension of that is as important now as straight sort of landscape value considerations. Important though that is, of course.
Projects that you do, your actual sort of design-led projects, is access to green space really important for you in those as well, and making sure everyone in that area feels, you know, an ownership and kind of wants to use the spaces?
Yeah, I think it's central, Rachel, and I can look back many, many years. We've been framework consultants to the Royal Parks, for example, in London for decades. And so many of those projects have been about increasing and improving access to the parks in London. And now that's something we're doing nationally. We work a lot on green and blue infrastructure projects for local authorities. So that's at the strategic level, looking at how they can be planned in. And those get carried through eventually to something like clay pits, which I described at the start of this discussion, where on the ground you create something that isn't intimidating, doesn't feel as though people are excluded, and so on. And you see that in different parts of the way we go about design. We're a leading designer for children's play space, for example. And one of my colleagues, Jeanette Emery Wallace, who leads a team involved in that, she originally designed the Diana Playground in Kensington. She did Tumbling Bay, which was the first legacy project on the Queen Elizabeth Park. Really innovative, exciting design, but design very much aimed at inclusion and seeking out harder to reach groups. So, you know, how they're presented, how they're positioned, how they're designed to make the environment a less intimidating place for people to go. And of course the pandemic helped a lot with that, because suddenly we all realized, I'm a resident of London. London has got fantastic open spaces, fantastic parks, fantastic water corridors, and hey presto, we all discovered them again. And I think a lot of our work now is building on that realization of close to home, the lovely places nearby, and creating more of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And LUC has had a really successful year, not just with some of those projects you've spoken about, which have been hugely successful, but also financially. Why do you think it has been such a successful year for you guys?
I think there are many aspects to that, Rachel. I think first and foremost, it's about, you know, the people at LUC. And it sounds a trite thing to say, but it's absolutely not. We, in consultancy services, you're a people business and you need the best people, but you need people who are invested and committed. And I believe we've got that. There are nearly 270 of us now. So we've grown quite a bit in the last few years. But crucial to that, I think, was at the start of 2020, indeed, just before the pandemic kicked off, we became an employee ownership trust.
Right, yeah.
Which effectively now everybody equally owns the company. That was a way of dealing with the previous ownership structure. We've always been employee owned, but it was in a handful of 30 odd shareholders. That now doesn't exist. So the company is run by a board of trustees on behalf of all its owners. So I think that helped people feel invested in what we were doing and committed to what we were doing. We've been very clear in our strategy about what we want to do. I also think what helps us and continues to help us, we're positive about the future, is the diversity of the services and skills and expertise that we offer to a wide client base. And if you take the basic ecological principle of diversity is strength, we're not totally invested in one place. We're not only doing residential work or commercial work or whatever it is. We're quite widely spread, but we feel, and this has been a conscious evolution of the practice, in areas where we now must really deal with problems. So we do a lot of renewable energy work, a lot of grid infrastructure work. We've already talked about open space and so on. But our ecology team, we've got a fantastic ecology team. They're at the forefront of rewilding and nature recovery and biodiversity net gain. All of these things are now what everybody is wanting to do. And smart developers, and developers generally are, have woken up to the fact that we can't ignore these things anymore. So I think that has left us in a very good place. So we've got broadly based skill base, broadly based client base. We're not exposed particularly to any bit of the economy. And, you know, look at what's happening at the moment. There's uncertainty, but we're reasonably confident that what we do will be continued to be needed, provided we continue to do it well. And I think we do it well. And that comes back to my starting point. We've just got very good people doing it, really.
Yeah. And are you finding clients are really on board then with kind of your way of working and putting the environment as a priority?
We are. I always say, I mean, I've worked at LUC for a long, long time. I joined in 1985, so I've sort of gone up through the practice. And I always think I've been incredibly lucky because of the clients I've worked for. And our clients are bought into this, I think, and people realise that you can't... I mean, that was what our founding, you know, the people who set up LUC, they were very much of that view, that the environment is a key client here. They often refer to this phrase, the invisible client. I don't think the environment is in an invisible client. I think it's a very visible client, and we're duty bound to protect it. But also, before we shortened our name to LUC, it stood for Land Use Consultants, and land use is key there. We deal with land use change virtually in everything we do. And you can do land use change well, or you can do it not so well. And there are many players in that. And clearly, a key player is a client who ultimately is paying the bill, and somebody who is investing. But with particularly, I think there's been a sea change with things like nature recovery. And an element of that has been driven by regulation with biodiversity net gain. But in a way, regulation tends to catch up good practice, and our clients are fully bought into that, and they can see that that's how you achieve, they can achieve what they want to achieve. So rather than battling with it, working with it, and that simple principle serves us well, I think.
Absolutely, absolutely. So going back a little bit, just on how this year has been, is it fair to say that the pandemic is still affecting business, or do you think we're kind of moving past those effects now?
That's a very interesting question, Rachel. It certainly is still affecting our business. We now have a hybrid working pattern, a formal hybrid working pattern. 3 years ago, we didn't anticipate that we were going to have that, albeit we had very good flexible working policies. So the nature of work, I think, has fundamentally changed. And generally fundamentally changed for the good. So our hybrid working policy, we have an expectation that all staff on average will be in one of our offices. We have six offices across the UK for a couple of days a week. But we're very flexible with that. We don't over-police it. Very mindful. And you know, I'm sitting at home talking to you now. I was in the office yesterday, so I moved between the two. And if you get that balance right, I think you get an optimum balance of work and life, if you like. And as a result, everybody's more efficient, perhaps. So there's that legacy of, there's definitely that legacy of the pandemic. Beyond that, though, it has influenced some of our work. And I made reference to the pandemic before when I was talking about open space planning. That is here to stay, I think. People thinking more locally about what we're providing for people to do, how that relates to well-being and mental health. And we've been involved in some fascinating projects where the linkages between health and well-being and open space and recreation. So it's affected some of our work. But now, as I said earlier, we're confident in the future. We think what we do is going to continue. So the pandemic isn't really affecting us in that way now. We don't really see that. And in fact, although it was fundamental to our working pattern, we pretty much carried on as normal. We'd already had the IT infrastructure in place before the pandemic. We transitioned to home a couple of weeks before the government told everybody they should. So it was pretty smooth for us, quite honestly. Of course, you have to make sure within that you take care of your staff, and you know, because there can be issues of isolation. We took on a lot of new people during the pandemic, and they for months they didn't go to an LEC office. Something I'm really excited about, which we weren't able to do during the pandemic, is we're 3 weeks today. I should be in Newcastle with all LUC staff, and it's the first time we've got together since 2018.
Wow.
So we're going to have some serious stuff. We're going to have some fun, including a Kaylee.
Oh, wow. That's so fun.
Yeah, it will be good. All of our do's always seem to end up with a Kaylee. I think that's the Celtic influence. And I'm not a great dancer.
But you don't have to be with a Kaylee, I don't think.
Yeah, it's always good fun. But the main thing, though, the main reason we're doing it, and it is that we just want everybody to come together, because a lot of people have joined the company during the pandemic and the immediate aftermath of the pandemic, and have only ever seen people on a screen. So it's an opportunity more than anything just to spend some time with one another. So there's quite a bit of downtime in there, just an opportunity to sit around, chat, have a walk, just get to know one another, really.
Yeah, that sounds so fun. I mean, drop me the address and I might tag along.
Yeah, well, you'd be very welcome. No. We're doing a couple of quite interesting things there, one of which if it's appropriate, I'd like to mention it. I talked earlier about the EOT, the Employee Ownership Trust.
Mm-hmm.
We, as part of that, no sooner had we set up the EOT, and of course the pandemic hit, so we started early 2020. We then had the pandemic, and that just took a lot of our attention. But we've now come back to really try and understand what active ownership means. You know, what does being an owner of a company really mean? And we've tried to capture that in a really exciting document, which is, we've called a charter. And as we sit, we're just about to sign off the final wording and design of that. And that is going to every member of staff before they arrive in Newcastle. And we're going to have one of the sessions talking about how we put the charter into operation. And really all the charter does is it sets out how the owners want the company board to manage the company. What, you know, where should our priorities be? What should we be doing? Maybe what we shouldn't be doing. And I think we're on the cusp of something really exciting with that. And again, I'm looking forward to seeing what people think of it, how they think we should put it into operation. So that is going to be one of the key things we focus on when we're in Newcastle.
Well, that sounds really exciting, and it leads me perfectly into one of my last questions. Looking to the future, what do you think are going to be some of the biggest challenges that are going to affect the industry or LUC, and where's going to be your focus?
Well, that's a very interesting point, and that has shifted. So we did a strategy for 3 years, which ends at the end of next year. But when we did that, we were talking about what our priorities might be, and there were various things. What has become the number one priority and consequently the number one challenge is recruitment. I think the industry generally is suffering from a skill shortage, a people shortage. So I talked about our work in renewable energy, for example. There's so much going on there, but we just need more people with the right skills to do it. So we are investing a huge amount in our recruitment, but also what working for LUC means, making it an attractive place to work. Ownership, we feel, is important, and the equal profit share that comes as a requirement of an EOT is one factor there. But looking at the other things that we offer staff, continuing to be a good place to work. So I think the number one challenge we face as a practice, and I suspect if you asked my contemporaries running other similar sized organisations in this sector, would be the same answer, is recruiting and then retaining our staff.
Yeah, I think across the board.
Yeah, we're a people business. And if you haven't got the people, you haven't got the right people, you can't conduct your business. That's the first thing. The second and overriding priority of the business is the role we play in tackling the climate and ecological crises, that existential threat that is real to all of us. Yeah. Even the most sceptical of people believe that now, perhaps with the one exception of Jacob Rees-Mogg. But everybody knows that we've got to deal with this. And we're doing that. We're doing it in two basic ways. We a lot of our work is advising and guiding people on how to deal with climate issues, ecological issues, carbon management. We have a carbon management specialist who's a relatively recent recruit to practice, and that's going well. But we're also working hard on ourselves as a member of the population, as an occupant of this planet, and how LUC accounts for carbon, how we reduce our carbon, how we get to net zero. And, you know, very much from the view that we can't be going around preaching to others that they should do it if we're not doing it ourselves. So we're putting in place an ever greater number of measures to reduce our carbon footprint, to make sure that we're doing the right things. And we feel that is fundamental to running a stable and positive business.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my final question for you is just a bit fun, really. We always ask our guests what plant they would take to a desert island. So what plant are you taking with you, John?
What plant? Well, it wouldn't survive, sadly, but my favourite tree is an oak tree. I love oak trees.
Oh, yeah.
I've got various pots. If I look out of my window with oak trees growing, and if you can indulge me a little bit, I'm a great music fan, and I was at the Green Man Festival.
Oh, lovely.
A couple of months ago in wonderful setting in the Brecon Beacons, just as the acorns were falling. So I gathered up some acorns from a Green Man, and they're planting in the garden. So hopefully If we were to talk again in a year, I'd have some oak saplings, but I know they wouldn't survive on a desert island.
No, it's your dream desert island, so you take whatever you want. I think that's a great choice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, John, for joining us. It's been really interesting to hear more about LUC.
It's a pleasure.
We really look forward to the landscape mapping assessment as that sort of comes out in the next few years. I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to John, and goodbye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.